You're listening to Subsound Radio. We bring you streaming and live broadcasting from the capital. This is the El Arpa Podcast. Welcome back to another episode of the El Arpa Podcast. Joining me in the studio is Maria. How are you?
Very well, thank you. You?
I'm very good, exactly. So this is our second and last podcast before we break for the Christmas holidays. How's it going? I feel like I haven't seen you since forever.
Really? It's going very well, thank you. We've been doing lots of things.
We have. On Saturday, you are dancing your little heart out.
Mm-hmm, I am, for charity. Well, it's for old people's home.
An old people's home?
Yeah.
You're dancing Mamma Mia, tunes inspired by the hit musical of ABBA?
No, we're not. Just Bollywood, which is what I dance.
Okay, and I will be in attendance there as well. Mm-hmm. Primarily as a devotee of Indian culture, but
sure,
also to put it on camera. And I've never seen you dance before, so that'll be unique.
In many aspects.
Don't disappoint me. Okay. So, you've probably seen the news, no? Spain, of course, is an hour ahead of London, Dublin, Portugal.
Mm-hmm.
And it looks very likely now that after Christmas, some point, that Spain will be more in line with the UK, Ireland, and Portuguese time zones.
Oh, they've been saying that for years.
And the work, they will finish at 5 o'clock. But this time it looks very secure because they have the support of all the different parties, which is very rare in Spain.
Yeah.
And there seems to be political will to do it. So, I don't know. Maybe we'll be living in a Spain that finishes at 5 o'clock or 6 o'clock.
So we won't be able to record the podcast then.
This is our hobby.
Yeah.
Our passion.
Oh.
Our whatever. So that's
it's
the big news from Spain. And of course, as per usual, we've been to a photo exhibition this weekend. We absolutely loved. So we're going to be talking about that in the second part of the show, aren't we?
We are.
Okay, and just a big shout out to Jimmy Murphy from Highfield Lane in Waterford. He won our big bumper Christmas hamper. For answering all the questions correctly.
Congratulations!
We had a great time at the soiree last week.
Woo-hoo.
So well done, Jimmy. So that's it for now, for this part, and we'll be joining you momentarily. An invisible friend?
I have a few.
You have a few?
Yes.
And do you see them now?
I always see them.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Okay.
They're always with me.
Wait a second. In Spain, an invisible friend means something else.
Yes, and I have an invisible friend, but only one that I have to give a present to.
Which is, of course, it's secret.
Well, I can't really say, can I?
It's Secret Santa. That's what I want you to say.
Oh, yes. It is Secret Santa, yes.
Okay.
We call it Invisible Friend.
Invisible Friend. Do you know why that is? Because Santa's not really a big thing here, I suppose, so that's probably it, right?
Well, it's because, like, you don't know who they are, so they're supposed to be your friends, and they're invisible because you don't know who they are.
Okay.
It's got a lot of logic in a Spanish sort of
In a Spanish kind of way.
Yeah.
Which is, like, in a logical kind of way.
Exactly.
Sounds like a very Irish thing as well. Before we finish, I have a bone to pick with you. And I decided to do this in the form of a podcast because reasons. I saw Conan O'Brien tear down the Autobahn on YouTube with a 3D camera, and you could spin around and and see the different parts three-dimensionally of his car. We have a 3D camera. So why are we not doing that in your car?
I have no idea, because we actually have an accessory for that.
We do have an accessory for that.
So, yeah.
Okay, let's do it. Strap in, we're going to do that.
Yeah, let's show people the Christmas lights around Madrid.
Okay, we could do that, actually. That is savage. So what started off as a minor tiff has ended up in a great idea. So,
as always with us.
Exactly. What starts as an argument usually stays as an argument, but it has some kind of positive coming from it. Well, that's the end of our spiel for another week. Next week, as we said, this is the... Well, today's our second and last podcast. Next week will be the last podcast before Christmas. And we'll be talking about charity and all the good things that happen at this time of the year.
Yeah,
because if you are a heartless person who couldn't be bothered helping people for 11 months of the year...
This is the time.
This is the time. If you're going to do it once, do it at Christmas. So thank you very much for listening and staying with us. As Enda from the Adapra podcast saying goodbye.
And Maria saying bye.
Photography, painting for lazy people. So,
well, I'm sure that's a definition that's never been written before.
Too late. It's been said in the podcast. It's fact. So, we went to the MAPFRAY Center in Madrid to see the work of an American photographer called Bruce
Davidson.
Exactly. Who's a bit of a big fish in the photography world. At least he was back in the day. I don't know how popular he is currently, but certainly he was famous when he was active and working, you know, when he was alive. So generally our reaction as a LARPA unit was overwhelmingly positive. No,
it was very positive, especially in contrast with some of our other reactions.
Exactly.
When we have completely
dissed it.
Yeah.
But you know, with every photographic exhibition, you have to give it a context, set the scene. So with the other ones, they've had some airy-fairy abstract sense, which can work sometimes, sometimes it doesn't. But this guy went the opposite way. How did he frame his photography?
Well, I think it was all around the theme of human emotion.
Well, the word humanist, no? Humanist approach to photography.
He's been described as a humanist photographer, which I think was... I wasn't quite sure before we went about whether that was, you know, just a word and how much content it was into that. But no, I think definitely it focused on human emotion in an interesting way.
And in a decade spanning from the 50s to the 90s, no? Spanning such broad topics as pioneers, Spanish poverty, street gangs, dwarves in a circus, civil rights, and he traveled quite extensively around the UK, also hopped over to Ireland, other European countries as well, and of course the United States of America, and particularly New York City in all its glory, capturing the black rights movements, the poverty in East Harlem, which is familiar to a lot of Latin residents, and also a place where Lorca called home for a short while. And he covered the beauty of Central Park as well, the people ambling around, the couples, the kids, and the flora and fauna. So much to discover in there if you do go there. And it's free, so I highly recommend it.
On Mondays?
On Mondays as well, okay.
That's only on Mondays.
That's important. So if you're flying in, fly in around
come
on Monday.
Yes.
Okay, so we got to start somewhere, obviously. So why don't we just start at the start, which is a fantastic place to start. So the first pictures we saw were of an old couple in rural America. So that's the scene. What was your reaction to those that series of photographs?
Well, they are the pioneers that you mentioned, so it's quite fitting that's the beginning of the...
Well, pioneers in what sense, though? Because, well, basically what I meant by that is that they were an ordinary couple, no?
Yeah.
Living in the sticks of the United States of America. He was on leave from the army. He wanted to take their photograph because he had an interest in photography. They basically took him in a sense, because whenever he had leave from the army, he stayed with them and he took very intimate portraits of them, their mundane realities, their everyday life. There's a very sweet photo of him where he that he takes where he photographs the wife checking on her husband who is asleep in the bed. He's 90-odd, she's in her 70s, for example, so they're very old. And look a bit weather-beaten, you know, probably had a hard life of working and graft. And he takes very intimate but very sweet photographs of them. Well, I think they're pioneers in the sense that these people don't get credit for the life they live. Yes, it is a little bit simple, maybe a little bit boring, and especially in the middle of nowhere, but the fact that they're there keeps those towns and communities alive and thriving, and that has a very important, if unseen, effect on the country as a whole, no? And here is this guy who really takes to them and captures a little bit of their story. So in that sense, they're tapping into the pioneer spirit of earlier pioneers, maybe. So that's why I liked it, even though I asked you originally why you liked it. So I selfishly monopolized
yes,
the answer. So let's go back to you and your thoughts.
No, I think, well, some of the things you said, obviously, I think he picked on people that, you know, other people wouldn't have noticed. And I think there was an interesting thing when looking at the pictures that you could almost feel like the silence within the house of like them being in a remote place, and you know how they had like their own existence within the house and some, well, kind of isolated from the rest of the world, and they build their own world for themselves, and he was able to capture that, which was without being intrusive, which was really
yeah, because some photographers, even when they're capturing something real and everyday, they try to do it in a style of capturing people in their in-between moments,
yeah,
in their unguarded moments, which has a lot of value, and there are a lot of photographers that we can point to that do that very well. But what I liked about this is that he's capturing them in their pretty much constant,
yeah,
moment, you know, and because he's approaching these subjects and his other subjects with such care and genuine affection, you know, it's almost impossible for his exhibition to fail. And it doesn't, because, as we said, it's a fantastic exhibition. So, as you said as well, yes, you can feel the silence and you can get a real sense of the community and the other communities and the other pictures through his work. So that's where we started. That's where you start if you go to the MAPFRE Center near Cologne in Madrid. So that's our jumping off point. So in general, what kind of comments do you have about the exhibition? What series grabbed your attention? How did you feel about, for example, Spanish Harlem? I know you like those pictures.
Well, I think what I got out of the exhibition was that something that I often don't find, and I find quite frustrating, that is lacking in other, you know, the photos, which is telling a story. I think in all the series there were people, like kind of characters that were just through the pictures, like for example with the dwarf that was you know, working in the circus, and you could form a kind of story behind those images. And another aspect I liked was that they were all, I don't know, treated in a very sensitive way, but that wasn't, you know, patronizing or kind of like moralistic or whatever.
Well,
which I thought was quite...
That's true. And also as well, you can get a sense of the community in the neighborhood. You feel like that by looking at the picture, you can kind of feel what's happening there.
Yeah, around.
Because there's great depth in his photography as well, which is a very good thing to have in images, you know, in movies or photographs. And there's a couple of pictures of people, and you can see outside the window, and you can see what they're looking at. It's not very great. Or you can see the depth in their apartment of the rotting wood, like a dog ensconced almost secretly under a bed, the peeling wallpaper. And it's pretty grim. And it is essentially a slum dwelling. And you hear so much about slums in Dickens or Joyce or literature. But to actually see it is nice in a way, because you never really do see pictures of it. So to give life to it again is very interesting, I think, to see that kind of stuff displayed in front of you. So expertly and so with such so much attention to detail
as
well.
I think that's right.
So also we saw the dwarves you mentioned in the photographic series. Now it's kind of strange because in American culture there seems to be this love affair with circuses and carnivals and carnies and carnival folk, and it extends across literature and songs and short stories and movies. It's a huge fascination that perhaps maybe as Europeans we don't fully understand. But of course we don't have to look too far to see examples of dwarves being painted by, you know, in Spain, no? Because we have the pictures of Velázquez, no?
Yes, that's
right. So he was trying to show them in a human light, no? That they were normally the class clown or the kind of foolish figure, but Velázquez was trying to give them a human characteristic, no? Treat them as people and give them a pedestal, no? Give them a showing to the world, because normally they're just there for comedic relief.
Yeah.
Do you think that our photographer friend here was tapping into that belief?
Well, I think, I don't know, very much so, because I think, to be honest, that you saw him just as an ordinary person, kind of like within his own reality, but at the same time not, to me, because there were several pictures, and in one of them he was having a drink or something at a bar, and you could see some men behind kind of laughing at him.
Exactly.
And then there was another one where he was performing and everybody was just looking at him. And there was another, like, close-up of his face, just as any other person. And I like that because it kind of separated... I felt like it separated the job that he was doing, from, like, his real personality. Where in the photo, like, where you saw just him, it kind of, like, gave away... I don't know, information about his personality not related to his physical appearance, which I thought was quite interesting.
I think it shows two things. First of all, the guys are looking at him in the bar.
Yeah.
That struck me as well. And I was thinking, it's a staggering lack of awareness, because they're looking at this guy without, you know, they don't care if they're seen or not. And there's a photographer there, you know. If you're the kind of person to look at people... but you don't care if you're going to be captured on camera doing it, you know. It is like a lack of awareness. But like his whole relationship with the rest of the world, it seems, is one of being a subject of looking. You know? So they're looking at him, and then when he's performing, people are looking at him as well. And of course, there we are in the exhibition, looking at him also. so you know, it's like a constant feature of his life, but you have different shades where one is of ridicule, one is perhaps of respect, or that's where he's in his element because he's working. And people are kind of beholden to him. And of course, in the exhibition, we see another characteristic of him, which is the one that the people in the cafe might not see, which is just an ordinary Joe going about his business and living his life, no? Which is what he is, of course, you know? So that was that picture as well. Anything else you want to say before we move on to the others in the series?
What's next?
What's next? Well, for example, there's one about street gangs, which I really... really liked, and I know you did as well. So again, do you want to take the lead?
Well, I think for street gangs, you're more into these things.
Well, to be fair, the podcast did save my life. I was in a street gang called the Easy E's, drifting, going down a bad road, and this love of podcasting kind of pulled me back from the brink. So
I know. So tell us about your experience.
It is too graphic for a podcast land. So, buy my memoirs whenever they're going to be written in the near future. So, the street gangs, a group of young people who are having the laugh, no, messing around, being kids, maybe 15-year-olds, 16-year-olds, 17-year-olds. And at that time, like we discussed, there was a huge American kind of obsession with youth delinquency. And you see movies like Cool Hand Luke talking about it. You see kind of informational... promotions and videos kind of warning against it, and you have these kids who probably do feel alienated, like a lot of kids do, and they're being pushed away by certain sections of the society. But he took the time to live with them, to photograph them as well, and it's fantastic, because, you know, they're just kids, you know, and this is the first time we see teenagers anyway. It's like the 50s is when the whole concept was invented anyway, and we see intimate portraits where they're kind of canoodling with loved ones, and that's when they're not posing.
Mm-hmm.
And it's fantastic, because they're just doing their thing, and he was there to capture it, which is what great photography is as well, just being there at the right moments in the right time. But also, you can see them kind of posing under the advertisements, photos of movie stars and different things. So, you know, they're, you can see where they're getting their inspiration for their look and their attitude and their way of being. And, I mean, even if you're familiar with the French movie Breathless, which is the classic of French cinema, it's about a guy who models himself on American cinema, you know? So it's like, in a way, it's a very age thing, you know? If you're every teenager or somebody who has been a teenager can connect to it. Or, you know, it's in that sense, it's a cross-generational thing. And also that being teenagers is universal. And that's why his photographs are universal as well. And just, you know, in different contexts in the city, in Coney Island, on the beach as well. And I don't know, gangs never go away. But these guys didn't seem to be like a drug-pushing, you know, fighting gang. They're just a bunch of kids who are friends hanging around. Trying to look tough, basically. Like a boy band. But without the music. Like a boy band. So that's why I liked it anyway, at least. I think, I don't know if you share those opinions or if you have another reason why you like that series.
I think that relation with the movies was quite interesting.
Okay.
But I liked it, but it wasn't one of my favorites, I would say.
That's fair enough. Well, we've done most of the photographs in that series. We're missing two. Photographs of Almeria in Spain, and also the photographs of the civil rights movement. So,
yes.
Let's talk about the civil rights movement first, and then we can finish with Spain, since we are doing a podcast from Spain.
We are.
So, hola, ¿qué tal?
Sí.
¿Cómo estás? Okay, well, these were fantastic pictures, really.
They were.
Unbelievable pictures. We saw these two pictures independently of each other. We weren't together at that part of the exhibition, but we focused on the same pictures. No, one was of a black woman with a sign. Khrushchev can eat here.
Yes.
Why can't I? Beautiful picture.
She was being taken away.
Been taken away by police as well.
Yeah.
And then another of a black couple. I think, are they hugging or they're in some kind of bar at music? But you can see the American flag and a picture of Kennedy as well.
Yeah.
So you know, I mean, the '60s is something that, you know, it's nostalgia. Nectar, you know, if you like nostalgia, you're going to go back to the 60s, and Kennedy, Khrushchev, those things are just, they signify so much, you know, and just to see them as the backdrop of the photographs, it helped really set the scene. So the photographer did his job setting the scene, but this also as well, just the everyday stuff was fantastic, you know, I mean, just so rich in historical detail, so rich in the culture of the time, and really set the backdrop to what was happening in America and internationally as well. And also, they had pictures of black people on buses, just kind of going around their daily life as well.
There was quite a few pictures about a tour that was, like a bus tour, that was organized to kind of raise awareness about black people not being able to, you know, mix buses and all this, and some white people went to support that tour, and he was in it, and I thought that was quite interesting because it finished with a picture of the big march in Washington, which kind of like was the final moment when people became more aware or more committed with the cause, because I think a lot of people were already aware, but you know.
Exactly, yeah. Mm-hmm. So it had and that was the last photograph in that section as well, no?
It was, yeah.
So yeah, it was a natural bookmark to that part. So aside from Central Park, which has some very interesting photographs as well, but you know, it's the least important part of the exhibition. So we'll look at Spain. I'll let you finish talking about it, because you're the Spaniard. What I will say is that I was shocked by the levels of poverty in there, but you did have the typical Spanish sense of humor, character and personality shining through as well in some of the pictures, no? With the kids playing dead, being surrounded by a priest. So, how do you feel about those pictures? Did you recognize them? Did you recognize that Spain? Was it shocking in any way, or...?
Well, it wasn't completely shocking, but I think it was probably mostly the amount of, well, the dirt on the kids, you know, the sun that they had on them, and the hair, like...
Barefooted, naked, running around.
Naked, running around, yeah.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it was a bit of a remote place, and in certain areas of like Granada and stuff, you can still like see the atmosphere like up in the mountains. It wasn't completely alien, but yeah, of course, it looks like something out of, I don't know, even like Ethiopia or somewhere.
That's what I was thinking. Yeah, it was third world level poverty.
Yeah. So it was quite peculiar. But then that one picture was quite shocking. But then, and even the woman that appeared, you know, it looked more like something like out of the end of the 19th century, beginning of the 20th century.
It was, yeah. The South's historically been poor, one of the poorest regions in Spain. Yeah. But that level was unbelievable.
Yeah, it was quite shocking.
But was that like a pocket, do you think, of the South of Spain? Or do you think the cities were relatively fine, you know, and certain villages were just absolutely screwed?
Yeah, a bit of a mixture, I would say. I mean, obviously the cities weren't good either, but it wasn't, you know, well after the war, you see, after the Spanish Civil War, it was a really bad time and for kids as well. But yeah, I think like, you know, rural areas were kind of like, I don't know, they just stayed in that. In that sort of like pre-industrial time, but
Well, it's great though because I think there was a Civil War photographic exhibition in Barcelona a few months ago, and they had pictures of Franco, and everybody went crazy. So, you know, to actually have a photographic exhibition that touches on the Civil War secretly pocketed away in a larger exhibition, I think is.
I kind of liked it very much in that sense. Now that you mention it, because it was kind of like, you know, this is what was happening in Spain while all the things that we know more about or that international people know more about were happening in other places. So it's kind of like quite a contrast, you know?
Well, I think there are a lot of things about Spanish Civil War that are still undiscovered or unknown in other parts of the world. We went last year to a documentary about African Americans who fought in the International Brigade against Franco forces, and it's not something that's widely known, and also the poverty, it's not something that people tend to talk about even here when you're discussing the Civil War. So I think you know, it's just a fascinating story, and you slowly you these different facets of it emerging. So I quite like that part of it as well.
Yeah, so with all the kids like you know, pretending like being shot and stuff. And I think since we always talk about movies, like there's something like quite peculiar about it, or quite striking about it, which is that those pictures of Spain were taken in those areas where, you know, like the biggest sort of like American blockbusters were being filmed.
Well, not the blockbusters, kind of like, but the spaghetti westerns, more or less, no?
Like you had things like, you know, El Cid or... Yeah. Things like these, like big productions, big Hollywood productions, you know, the Ten Commandments, all these movies were filmed there. You know, so it's quite, you know, it's quite interesting that there's that link between American culture and Spanish culture. But the Spanish culture that you see is actually the real thing that is happening behind the scenes.
Exactly.
It's quite revealing, I think.
Well, because movies at that time as well were just escapism. You know, you didn't have Ken Loach movies, for example.
Of course.
That were gritty. But yeah, it's interesting because we discussed in another podcast the Spanish influence on American movie posters. So Hollywood posters starring Kirk Douglas, Clint Eastwood, James Bond were all penned by Spanish artists. No, they're all illustrated and drawn by Spanish artists. So there's a huge link as well between Spain and Hollywood that people mightn't be aware of anymore. Mm-hmm. Close to Madrid, of course, you also have the graveyard from The Good, The Bad and The Ugly, which plays its part in the denouement of the Clint Eastwood classic. So Spain, great country for everything.
Dr. Zhivago.
And Dr. Zhivago as well. Not as good as that, but so a bit overblown, if you ask me. But okay, well, so overwhelmingly positive.
Yes, very positive.
Yeah, so yeah, go see it if you're here.
Google.
Or just Google his photographs, because they're probably online as well if you're not in Spain or Madrid.
Interesting
to you. So yeah, seemed like a great guy. Did great work, and we can't recommend it highly enough.
On to part three.
Indeed. You're listening to Subsound Radio. We bring you streaming and live broadcasting from the capital. This is the El Arpa podcast.